What's going on? I can't travel to Durban, and I really need to see the team. Our telephone bill is through the roof, our server crashed, and we've lost all our files.
Are you getting frustrated with problems in your business? Win at work and calm the chaos with Vox's intelligent business solutions. Work smarter, not harder, and connect your business to the world from 899 Rand. T's and C's apply. Visit vox.co.za for more information.
Are you tired of selling your kidney for a laptop? You need to take notes in your family WhatsApp group without your boss thinking you're not working? Tired of explaining something when you could just draw it and share it? How about that backend? Is it heavy laptop related? Let the Mesa Fundi come to your rescue. Hashtag freedom with Fundi. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is Tech Central. I'm joined now by Ross McElroy, co-founder of Cars.co.za. Cars.co.za celebrated its 10th year last year. It started as a motoring marketplace and has since expanded into content and has now even launched a motoring show on YouTube, which I have to say is pretty slick. Ross, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Duncan. Thanks for having me and for that cool intro.
Pleasure. Take us back to how this business got its start and what happened along the way.
Sure. That is a long story, and it feels even longer since we've been, in lockdown. But Cars.co.za essentially started with a couple of friends from school. I mean, I was still studying at varsity at the time. We started a business called Wax Media, and we started doing graphic design, web development, and through a series of serendipitous events, we stumbled upon the guys who had the site Cars.co.za, and we worked with them for a little bit, and eventually ended up taking it over from them and making it our own, and it cannibalized Wax Media as we put our resources into that, which was a standalone business. And we wanted to, I guess from the Wax point of view, we were servicing clients a lot, and we wanted to kind of be in control of our own destinies and to kind of build something that we could invest in and get sort of a passive income from. So yeah, as I said, it was it's a fairly long story at the beginning, but we managed to get the site and then to pivot it in a slightly different direction where it became more of a marketplace and less of a dealer-owned site. And from there it grew from strength to strength. We cannibalized the majority of the other business fairly quickly. I mean, that does still exist, but we moved out of that business and into Cars.co.za 2009. So since then, we've just been focused on that.
And has it been bootstrapped all the way?
Yeah, so we've never taken on investment or any funding. I mean, I think at most we took an overdraft at some point or facility. We never actually used it. But we were constantly on sort of the breadline. I mean, we were working and investing everything and reinvesting everything into the business. But yeah, bootstrapped from the beginning to now.
And who are the guys behind it apart from yourself? And are you all a bunch of petrol heads?
So at the moment, I mean, and for the vast majority of the business's history, it's been myself and my partner, Alistair McMurray. Mm-hmm. We kind of, initially there were a few other partners in the beginning days, but they've all subsequently been bought out. So yeah, we were the guys who kind of worked in the business and who currently, are the shareholders in the business. And, it's not really a story of petrol headness. We were more tech people. So, I mean, right. I did IT at university. Alistair did, he's an electrical engineer. And truth be told, we're slowly acquiring a love for cars. But that was not our natural proclivity. We were tech guys, and we loved tech, and we liked business. We built the sites. We were involved in search engine marketing. We were involved in SEO, all of those kind of things. And cars just seemed to be an outlet for that. All right. But over the years, as we've brought on more and more members of the team who have an affinity and a passion and a love for cars, it's a bit more contagious. And as we've started to get our own cars and play in that space, it's hard not to fall in love with them. So, yeah, I don't know if I'd classify myself as a petrol head yet, maybe a budding petrol head. But
what do you drive?
Ah, At the moment, I drive, or actually that depends. See, I'm a complicated individual. I have a car for Johannesburg, which is a Polo.
Right.
And I have a car for the coast, which is a Subaru Forester. And that's so that I can fit all my surfboards and stuff in it. But now that I've been this side of the world for a while, I am in Joburg currently. So I drive my Forester. And then in the cars business, we have a few more kind of desirable. I have a Porsche Cayman R, collectible. We have a few in our sentimental fleet, which we don't get to drive all too often, but every now and then we do. And those are South African specials and classics in their own right. So we have a Superboss and we have an Alpha GTB 3 liter and we've got a Capri Piranha and we've got a BMW 325 IS Kushesh. So yeah, we've got a few cool cars in there that we occasionally get to drive as well.
Yeah, yeah. And do you do a lot of launch events and getting out to cool, interesting places? I always think motoring journalists have the best life. They get to travel all over the world and do exotic things. Do you get to do a lot of that, Ross?
They do. They get to do incredible things, and I use the word they because, no, I don't get to do that very often. We had a dilemma at the start of our business. And I think it's probably a dilemma that most people will face at some point when you start up a business is, you know, do you take the cool perks or do you do what's right for the business? And, you know, we didn't have the necessary sort of knowledge, tools, even passion to kind of accurately convey to a consumer what a good car and what a bad car was. And so we decided to bolster our team with people who could and would be able to do those things. And unfortunately, that meant we didn't get the cool cars. So I have been on one launch. I went to America, to Austin, with Mercedes-Benz, and we drove the circuit of the Americas, and it was incredible. But I did also learn the workload that comes off the back of that. I mean, you're there to do a job, and there's no time off, really, and it's not as glamorous as it would appear. Mm-hmm. But I do think you get a whole bunch of bucket list moments that you just would never be able to. I mean, how do you drive the circuit of the Americas in a brand new Mercedes Benz? I mean, that's not something you can just readily flick a switch and do. So
yeah.
I'm very blessed to have done that. But it does come with a lot of hard work. So I do spare a thought for what the motoring journalists do go through because it looks more glamorous. And in some ways it is as glamorous as it looks, but there is an iceberg of really hard yards underneath that.
Absolutely. So you guys built a marketplace. How does that work exactly? I know you've partnered with dealer networks, and you facilitate the sale of purchase of new and I think used cars as well. How did you build that marketplace and how's it done?
So essentially, We are going out and we're trying to give South Africans a space where there is a consolidated view of everything that's available to them, and they can obviously interact with the people who have that vehicle for sale. So, you know, it becomes almost like a starting point in their search, and then obviously we facilitate that with our content as well to give them sort of advice and a helping hand through it. But at the point that they wish to transact with the dealer or the seller, whether that be a private individual or the likes, we don't carry any of the metal. We're a tech sort of conduit, if you will. And so we then put them in touch with that dealer to conclude the transaction. And obviously we massage it through and we facilitate some of the customer service angles at the back. But, you know, as with a booking.com or an Airbnb or an Uber, we're essentially connecting those two sort of sides of the transaction. And then the dealers will pay us a sort of monthly fee, and the consumers who are selling individual cars will pay per vehicle just to have their listings available. And then a consumer coming in and actually inquiring on a vehicle would do that free of charge. So we essentially help to facilitate the sale and we're remunerated for the ability to kind of conclude those sales. Some of those are done on a conclusion basis, but the vast majority are done on a kind of advertising space model. So
right. We're
essentially paid by the seller to help facilitate the sale.
And when did you decide to get into the content side of things? And was that done primarily to drive eyeballs to your marketplace?
Yeah, so we got into content, I would say, around 2012, maybe just before 2011, somewhere in that space. And, you know, when you're a small startup and you're fighting against people with big brands and big sort of marketing budgets and great connections and stuff, you have to find new ways of kind of getting bang for your buck.
Hardy Dars. They always bomb the podcast, don't they? Living in Joburg.
Well, exactly. And I think rightfully so, you know. It just shows that this is, it is live, you know. But no, so we needed to find clever ways to kind of engage with our audience and to build rapport with them, to actually help them to kind of, I suppose, add value to the transaction. I mean, if we have a marketplace and we have less vehicles than our competitors and they have bigger brands and there are a number of them at this point, you know, how do we differentiate ourselves? So one was to get eyeballs, to get people to interact with our brand. Secondly was, how do we add more value? How do we help somebody? And what is somebody who is going to come to our marketplace? What are the other elements that they need facilitated in that journey? And where can we actually do that? So content marketing seemed like a really good idea at that point because A, no one was doing it well. B, it was adding value into our space. And C, it enabled us to chat to people in a much longer sort of lifespan, because once you've bought a car, like, we really have nothing more to say to you for 3 to 5 years as the average South African transaction would last. And so we wanted to communicate more readily and build relationships that had meaning. And that's how we believed we could build a strong brand. So we started off creating content, and it was, you know, truth be told, rather rudimentary and probably quite, quite poor. It was more, we used it in SEO spaces. We used it in a number of different spaces, but very quickly we learned that if we were going to actually create value, we needed it to be high quality. And so we started reaching out to, you know, the best in the business. And we were very lucky that we managed to forge some great relationships with some of the biggest names in kind of the motor industry, especially in the content and consumer space, fairly early. Guys like Hannes Huerstezen and David Taylor and Chiro de Siena. And I mean, we have a ton more, you know, Ashley Oldfield. We've got a really, really incredible team of people that are producing content at the highest level. And we believe that is a value proposition first and foremost, rather than just a content marketing, because eyeballs are great, but if they don't translate into actually providing value to your customer, well, then you're just going to get an eyeball and lose an eyeball. Mm. So we wanted to build more rich and deep relationships. And that's why we've used our content, but also the other tools we've built over a period of time is actually helping to facilitate that transaction.
So you do car reviews, I presume, but you've also started a YouTube channel, which I see has over 200,000 subscribers, which is very impressive for a South African YouTube channel. How long has that been running for, and what sort of content are you putting out on there?
Yeah, so we started with written content essentially, and then as with our business, I mean, we always try to look where the trends were going. I mean, we started doing search engine marketing early, we started doing SEO, we started doing content, and then the next big step was video, was obviously one of those frontiers we wanted to kind of bridge into. But the problem with video is you can't get away with mediocrity, or at least you couldn't back in the day. I think, you know, now raw, authentic stuff is coming to the fore, but back in the day, like, to get a video that really kind of resonated with people had to be done well. And so we earmarked it and we couldn't get it over the line. And then as I alluded to, I met a gentleman, five to 6 years ago, by the name of Chiro de Siena, who, we got on really well. Initially, we started working on some space, and how we could bridge into the video space. And he had all the talent and all the dreams and all the ideas. And I think he just, I suppose, needed a platform to kind of outlet and to get that. And we brought him on board and we found a good arrangement. And I don't want to say single-handedly, but very close to single-handedly, he got that channel up off the ground. Mm-hmm. And obviously we bolstered the team more and more and more as we've invested in it. But video is a beautiful platform. If you have the right parameters, I mean, video works incredibly well, and you just get such a much more tangible and visceral experience. And when you're talking about cars and such a passionate and almost visual and auditory sort of experience, there's not much better than video for kind of capturing that. So once we started getting that traction and pushing into it, we realized it was a great differentiator for us. And in terms of the content marketing, building the value, and also, as I say, differentiating us from bigger brands that had bigger budgets, we now had a very good chip to play, and we just kept, I guess, backing that. And it's just been a great success for our business to see how much it's grown. But the positive rapport and sentiment around that, and the subscriber is so much more than just a number, because it's a kind of a, like a vote of confidence, if you will, in what you're doing, and especially in YouTube or social media where the audience can be so brutal. And believe you, we've experienced that as well.
Yeah.
You know, you need to, when you got something good there, we've doubled down on that, and that really has been a great channel for us.
So you launched the cars.co.za show, which is very much like a TV series, and I must say it's very slick, as I said at the beginning of this podcast. It's international quality. How's the reception been to that? I see the first episode has about 65,000 viewers already.
Yeah, so the reception's been incredibly positive. I mean, we look obviously to our core base of followers, the guys who are our subscribers and obviously follow us on different platforms, and we get generally a fairly good amount or a litmus test of what it's looking like there, and the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. You know, obviously we'll see how the views go. It's quite tricky because we decided we'd launch it on a time slot every week, the same time, Thursday, 8 o'clock, and we'd start to build it up because building that awareness and that expectation is pretty critical. And then in the second week, the president decided to, I guess, address the nation in our time slot. so we had to move it. So, you know, our building up of consistency has been derailed, but I said to the guys, and we were discussing it, like, if we're going to be quick and nimble in terms of moving in one direction, we must be nimble in moving in the other direction. And I don't think we can compete with the president at this sort of critical time. So we moved that, and that caused a little bit of disruption in episode two. But the beautiful thing about YouTube is that it technically lives forever. So we have the premiere, which lasts on Thursday at 8 o'clock. But these videos really just build up momentum over time. I mean, we have videos that have got over 3 million views. And when we put them out in a small YouTube channel, in a sort of South African ecosystem, we just didn't expect those sorts of numbers. But it's 5 years, and they're in the searches, and people are looking for them, and they just continue to build. And hopefully with that, with the show, what we want to see is as the awareness becomes bigger, we'll see more and more uptick in that. But right now, I mean, for launching a show largely hamstrung by the lockdown that we're all in, taking a big gamble on it and a risk, we're overwhelmingly positive with, and the sentiment has been overwhelmingly positive for us as well. So yeah, it's a great success for us, and I'm super proud of the team for doing it, because it is extremely stressful to get a TV show executed with all the technical challenges, the logistic challenges as well. Moving, I mean, you don't have hard drives that you can just transport, so all the files have to be pushed into. I mean, I didn't realize how much was going on behind the scene when we initially decided to do this, and it's been another great success for us. So we're going to keep investing in that, and yeah, excited for what the future holds with that. And especially when lockdown ends, because we had beautiful studios, and I mean, we've got the first few pilots that we have where, I mean, it's exquisite to see, and now Chiro's in his lounge, but authenticity comes through. And so, really impressed with what he can do. He's a superstar.
I was going to say, it must be very difficult to do a motoring show during a lockdown, because you want to be out there on the roads getting great footage, and you can't.
Well, exactly. We are lucky that we have some footage in stock. So, you know, we can lean on that. But yeah, the team is raring to go. I mean,
I'm sure
a whole bunch of stuff they want to get going, and we're hopeful that level four will be good for us, because there's a kind of a gray area, which we are busy querying now around production. And a number of others as well, but to see if we can get our business up and running in a safe manner would be ideal.
Yeah, let's have a look at the first 60 seconds of episode two, just to give Tech Central viewers an idea of the show.
Okay, everyone ready? Radio silent.
I'm speaking into my stopwatch.
I'm recording it.
All right, everyone ready? Radio silence, please. Cameras ready.
It's a bit slow.
I mean, if I ran, it would be faster.
Oh, got him on the launch. You and me. You and me.
Great fun. I watched the first episode. Ooh, why is it doing that? Let me pause that in the background. So
watch the whole episode if you want.
It's on YouTube, cars.ca.za, if you want to see them. Good, great production values. I watched the first episode and it was, as I said, international production values. But it must be expensive to make a show like this. Do you make back the money through sponsorships and advertising, through YouTube advertising, or is this more meant as a driver of traffic to the website?
Yeah, it is expensive. It's become a little cheaper since the lockdown, where we've dispensed with all the pleasantries. But for us, it's an investment in a number of things. And no, we don't make the money back at this point. So, firstly, YouTube advertising it's not a great channel for us. I mean, it's one of the things we will actually share in the coming months, because we've committed, we switched on YouTube advertising, and we've committed to donating all of the proceeds that we make from our channel through to COVID-related charities and the likes, you know, to help South Africa through this case. But it's, you will be surprised when we push out the numbers of what that actually pushes out. I mean, I think we've made a couple of $100 already. Mm. In the first week or so. So, you know, it's not a great channel for us, where those episodes are costing us hundreds of thousands to kind of produce and to kind of shoot, and the logistics behind them and the camera rental and all of these things that are just so expensive. But we believe that from a brand building and from a value proposition that it gives Cars.co.za a great, relationship engagement and a great way to communicate with consumers early in the cycle. So we do car reviews, to your point earlier. We do some of the more exciting stuff as well, but it also shows us what we can do. And as a business that wants to be innovative and wants to be progressive and wants to, and always wanted to kind of be at the top end and the business end of kind of what South Africa was able to produce, it gives us a great differentiator there. So we are really trying to push the envelope and do incredible things. And I think that does come back and help us with our brand equity. And when someone's looking to buy a car, we want Cars.co.za to be the first place that they go to. And so, you know, if you just shout to people enough, it has an effect, I suppose. Yeah. But when you really engage with people, when you've made them smile, when you've helped them through a buying decision, where you've brought them joy and talkability and stuff, that, I guess, is, as I said at the start, a much richer relationship. And so I believe we get those dollars back in terms of rapport and marketing, brand building and the likes. But we do have some view to try and monetize it. I mean, that is definitely part of the future goals, and also to eclipse more into an international marketplace with it. Because the problem with our current business as a marketplace is obviously we facilitate the buying and selling of stock, and that's all very local and it's geographically ring-fenced. And so with some of our new products, especially around video and around paraphernalia and merchandise, et cetera, we can begin to bridge, and we have bridged. I mean, our Sentimental brand is international, albeit in small doses, but we are getting people that are loving the South African stories and that are now kind of buying into them from global markets. So there's a number of different strategies there that we need a bit of time and a bit of runway to kind of execute, but for now and historically, the Cars.co.za content platform has been around adding value and essentially building a brand and a brand rapport with our customers. And that's where we believe we get the return.
Yeah, I was going to say Top Gear started as a pokey little British motoring show, went global, and of course spun off into Amazon's The Grand Tour now. Although I'm not sure it's really a motoring show anymore. I think it's more of a travel show, they've been hugely successful with that show internationally. I mean, what are your long-term ambitions with your show? Do you see it gaining a majority international audience over time?
I would say, I mean, our focus is always South Africa for now, because that's what we know. But we do fundamentally believe that because of the sheer size of the global audience, and because we've got such an interesting story, I mean, for the size and geographic location, I think South Africa as a country punches above its weight globally in many spaces. I mean, people know and resonate with this country in very interesting ways. And so we do believe we can go international with a number of these spaces. I mean, one of the programs that we do work on, which to your point around travel, is we've got a series called The Journey, which has largely been spearheaded by Kiero Lalaka, who's a travel writer initially and came on board into a car space. So he does a lot of stuff with us there. And we go and we explore Africa and we explore some in his road trips, if you will. And in episode two, we actually have one of our road trips up to the Zambezi. Where we go in search of a very, very rare and beautiful wave. And then we take on a little bit of an eco spin to that. So yes, I do believe we can take this global. And if our business, continues to go, I mean, it already is global. Our audience is not entirely based in South Africa, which is what YouTube affords us as well. And that's one of the other reasons why we switched on the YouTube advertising, is that, you know, we are able to reach a slightly different advertising audience there as well. So, It's small at the minute, but absolutely. We think we've got a world-class product. We think we've got a world-class team. And we think that South Africa as a subject and subject matter has got so much richness here that we can celebrate. And that is, the good stories and the amazing stuff that we've done in this country is a global, success. And so I think, yeah, absolutely. We want to take it to bigger markets as well. Yeah.
Russ, let's pivot a bit. I'm keen to get your views on the motoring industry more broadly, particularly in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously dealerships are closed at the moment. I think they're opening again from the 1st of May, possibly in a limited way. But I'd imagine consumers are feeling rather stressed at the moment and probably not all that keen on, necessarily that keen on big ticket items like motor vehicles. What impact do you see the COVID-19 pandemic having on the local car industry over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so there's a number of different things to unpack there. Firstly, as it stands now, a lot of our dealers have pivoted in line with some of the stuff that we've been doing, and many of them of their own accord have been very responsive and very progressive in trying to continue to run a dealership and facilitate sales without the dealership actually being open. So, you know, car buying process is not sort of a walk-in, walk-out model. You know, there's a lot of research, there's a lot of kind of back-end communication that goes into facilitating that sale. And so they're able to facilitate that up to a point even now. So we're still fully operational as a business. Most of our dealers are still fully operational. And so if you put through a lead and inquiry, someone will get back to you and you can begin the transaction. But we also know from dealing with a number of consumers that your non-serious buyers have largely disappeared. The number of people on our site we've seen drop extensively. I mean, we've seen, I think, a 30% drop in traffic, but we've seen an increase in time on site. We've seen an increase in pages and pages per visit, et cetera. So it showcases that people are maybe researching a lot more and a lot more tentative to kind of commit, but they still are there. The other thing that's worth noting is that we always think of buying a car as a big ticket item, but one of the things that does happen in recession is that people have to offload their car because they can no longer afford it, et cetera, and they want to downgrade. And so your new and used car markets pivot quite interestingly in spaces like this, because, you know, where I'm financially stressed, I may want to, you know, sell my car back to the trade or to somebody else because I want to get a smaller car. And so there is still a huge amount of transactions that go forward. That all being said, there's no way that I can predict that this is going to be an easy time for the motor industry. I think we partner with West Bank on our consumer awards, and they do a talk for the motor industry every year there, where they do a fairly accurate prediction of what they imagine the motor industry to look like, and they had predicted, I suppose, a slight, very, very slight decline in the motor industry over this year. I mean, the presentation feels like a lifetime ago, even though it was only a few months, because the world has changed so rapidly. But, you know, now that it's changed, if we were in a good market predicting a slight downturn, with all of the stuff that's gone on now, plus the months that have transpired without too many sales being able to be facilitated, it's going to be impacted. It's going to be hit really, really hard. We know this. Looking globally, we've already seen how markets are hitting, in some places, all-time lows, record lows. I mean, this is taking into account the recessions of 2008, et cetera, and we're still seeing those markets, I guess, really, really impacted negatively. So it's going to be tough. I think that, you know, the market was already in a tough space, and even with the shift maybe to people downgrading, et cetera, it's going to be quite a difficult time. We also look at the dollar. I mean, the dollar fluctuating like it has.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah. I mean, that must really push up local vehicle prices, which I imagine has a direct impact on sales.
Yeah, it should. I'm not the expert on this, and I don't want to be quoted out of context, but I believe that a number of the motor manufacturers have taken some form of insurance on this. So obviously they'll be able to delay that that increase in prices. I think there have been a lot of announcements around that whereby there's going to be a window because there's stock already in the country and there's potentially insurance and the likes. It's going to be a window where we're afforded almost like a safety blanket against that dollar fluctuation. But you know, it's going to hit us eventually. You know,
so that could actually boost. That could actually boost sales in the short term if consumers know that the prices are going to jump massively, say towards the end of the year.
Absolutely, and that's one of the other things that we've pushed out in our space and our communication is that, like, as weirdly counterintuitive as it may seem, this may actually be the best time to buy a car in the foreseeable future. You know, their prices, there's consumer uncertainty, et cetera, but it could just get worse. And these are things that we need to consider. So, yeah, it is a very complicated ecosystem. I'm sure that is true for almost everybody. And, you know, how you look at how people have come out of this as well and how quickly the economy starts, et cetera, is all going to be very, very different. But I think, you know, we're predicting, and I mean, we've seen it in our business already. I mean, the financial impact of this has been swift and it's been severe. And so, I think the motor industry is going to get a little bit tougher before it gets better. But I guess there's always opportunity in these spaces. So hopefully we can try to keep positive and find ways around it. And maybe if we can get through these difficult months quite quickly, and we're always hopeful that we can, you know, we can get back to full operations and get the economy moving. And perhaps with social distancing being a norm that sits around for a long time, you know, there may actually be a reason for more people to buy cars where previously they didn't. So I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see how that all plays out. But there are a number of factors which are moving at this point. And I think the overwhelming, I guess, indicator at this point is that it's going to be tough, definitely before it gets better.
Yeah. I wanted to get your view on electric cars. And there's a lot of talk about electric mobility and sales are rising rapidly in Asia, Europe, and North America. But here in South Africa, there seems to be not too much consumer interest in electric cars. And there also seems to be a very limited range of electric vehicles available for sale in South Africa. What do you think is the reason for that? And do you think it's going to change anytime soon?
I do think it's going to change. I mean, we've worked quite closely with a number of brands. Very recently, we got an electric charging station put in at the office so that we could facilitate testing and we could obviously do our part. I mean, we're trying to go and become carbon neutral, and we've got many different eco endeavors that we're currently running. So that was just in line with that. And we've been, privy to some of the new product that has come through, and electric cars are incredible. They really are. I mean, I'm a big fan. I mean, we've been driving the new Golf. Well, it's actually not the new. It's the current generation Golf 7 electric, and it's not coming to South Africa. So VW have brought a few of them in just to kind of start to whet the appetite of the market and start to get their dealers ready for what electric will look like. So they're kind of like an exploratory venture, but with a very strong view to kind of move into the space, as many other brands are doing as well, I imagine. So, yeah, we will see electric come to South Africa. I think the brands have made it fairly clear that is something that's going to happen. I think we generally follow global trends, and we generally are a little bit lagged. We do see this. So we're starting to see that uptick in push from the guys to really bring electric to the fore. And I think, you know, one of the other things that really needs to happen is you need to have the electric infrastructure for that too. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens with all the, I suppose, the power issues and things which have been alluded to in different shapes and forms that they might be addressed at some point, and whether we can go private or not. But yeah, having a good solar and or electric generation network is critical to having these EVs. And, They are incredible. They're a bit expensive as well at the moment, I think.
They are.
So you need to see that come down. And I think in a marketplace like ours where cars are already so expensive, I mean, especially relative to kind of other marketplaces. I mean, the cost of a car as a percentage of salary is just, it's extremely high in this country. So you put EV costs on top of that, you put the inconvenience around potentially having it, and it becomes almost a no-brainer not to go down that road. But I think that the global sort of mandate to move in that direction, coupled with the way that the current brands in the country are looking at it, will nudge that, I guess, further or closer and closer, shall we say, to a point where you actually have a decision. And we'll start to see, I think, a much more – actually, I don't know what COVID's going to do to all of this, but we were lined up and really moving in a direction where I think we're going to see a big uptick in that in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and do you think the government should be doing more in terms of tax breaks? Because I know the US and European governments offer big tax breaks to vehicle manufacturers, to incentives to consumers, indeed, to buy electric vehicles. Do you think the South African government should be doing a lot more in this regard?
Yeah, I guess that's always a tough question. The government's got a ton of things that are kind of going on concurrently and probably a delicate balancing act. But it kind of makes sense to me. I mean, there's... We've got to have, as I say, the infrastructure in place to deal with it as well. So, I mean, I'm a firm believer that we should have more incentives to bring solar and other forms of renewable energy into the country as well.
There
was supposed to be aeroplane.
Aeroplane in lockdown.
I seem to be living in a very, like, the flat path of everything. I apologize for that.
I understand the Hardy-Dars. I don't need to understand the aeroplane, but
anyway. Yeah, no, for sure.
We'll go and check Park Radar.
I'll take the moment to think about the question that was posed to me, you know. But yeah, I mean, I do think that, you know, if you want to kind of move into an eco space, you have to give people a reason to do it. And I think the problem with EVs right now is you really have to want to go and do it. It's more of an inconvenience than it really should be. Mm. And so if you want to get people to move in that direction, you now have price, infrastructure, all of these things in terms of availability of stock, et cetera, that are becoming hurdles in your way. And I think that as a government and as a country and as manufacturers, we need to be trying to remove those hurdles to get people to move in the direction that we need them, that we need them and or want them to go for sustainability. And so, yeah, I mean, I think anything that can create more momentum and more impetus to move in a direction is a good thing. And so, yeah, I would definitely think that there should be tax breaks for that, but along with a whole bunch of other things that need to potentially move in cahoots.
You think Tesla's ever going to come to the country? Because I really want one of those.
We've actually tried to bring Teslas in. It boggles the mind that, you know, you've got a South African-led international business and we can't get the cars here per se. I think they will come here. I mean, in some shape or form. I think that, it's weird when you see the production numbers and then you see how many, I don't know, cars there are that are being, the supply and demand numbers. I mean, the numbers that Tesla are producing is just not enough to kind of even scratch the surface of the global sort of car market. Mm-hmm. And so South Africa is a place where you're probably going to have more complexities to get in. You've got a very small market. Your currency makes it very complicated. I can kind of understand why they don't come here immediately. I mean, we see this in a number of other spaces, but I don't know. I'm hopeful that they will come. I really like the work that they're doing. So, you know, as I said, we've tried to get one a few times, and just the additional costs to bring one in are, and then you have no servicing, you have none of the other kind of elements there as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm hopeful that they'll come. But as I say, there's a number of different manufacturers that are doing incredible stuff in the EV space as well. And I think we must be conscious not to overlook that as well, because I think the EV space as a whole is going to be quite interesting. I think the Tesla is definitely at the forefront of that, and it's quite a sexy brand, so it's hard to overlook it. But there's a lot of really cool stuff going on with the manufacturers that we do have here as well, and so I think we could get by without Tesla here, but it would be nice if they came.
Yeah, especially given the South African connection.
sure.
But Ross, I think we'll leave it there. It's been a great discussion. Great to talk to you, and all the best with cars.ca.za and your global expansion ambitions. Check out YouTube cars.ca.za for more. Ross McIlroy is co-founder of cars.ca.za. Thanks so much for talking to Tech Central.
Cool. Thank you, Duncan. Thanks for having us. And yeah, look forward to catching up soon, hopefully.